ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Questions received via the internet, by the grace of these modern demons who create all these facilities for sense gratification. We can utilize their efforts for preaching Krishna consciousness. Or we can go to hell also by misutilizing all these things. So there are a couple of related questions. I'll read them. First one is that according to Shastra, Matajis are not allowed to go out for material education, but are they allowed to do book distribution in various places like trains, stalls, etc.? Another query, similar or related. You, that means referring to me, posted a quote from Srila Prabhupada on BVK Sangha Group as follows. Why women are taught to become chaste. This is from Srila Prabhupada's lecture on Bhagavad Gita in Hyderabad on November the 26th, 1972. Srila Prabhupada stated, I shall get my next body according to my mental condition. I shall get my next body according to my mental condition at the time of death. So, just like our women are taught to become very chaste. Why? That is a process to give her a chance to become a male in the next life. A woman, if she is educated to become chaste, attached to the husband, then naturally at the time of death she'll think of the man, and she gets immediately. That is promotion. Similarly, if a man is very much attached to his wife, he'll think at the time of his, he becomes woman. These are the science. So that's the end of the quote from Srila Prabhupada. And then the question, is it not a good idea that instead of becoming attached to her husband, a woman become... This is supposed to be edited by Murari? No. A woman becomes attached to Krishna. A quote in that regard. So this is a quote from Krishna book, a rendition of the Srimad Bhagavatam 10th canto. And although it's not stated here, it's a quote from Srimati Rukmini Devi speaking to Sri Krishna. She said, My dear Lord, you have advised me to select one of the princes, such as Shishupal, Jarasandha, or Dantavakra. But what is their position in this world? They are always engaged in hard labor to maintain their household life, just like the bulls working hard day and night with an oil pressing machine. They are compared to asses, beasts of burden. They are always dishonored like dogs, and they are miserly like cats. They have sold themselves like slaves to their wives. Any unfortunate woman who has never heard of your glories may accept such a man as her husband. But a woman who has learned about you, that you are praised not only in this world, but in the halls of the great demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, will not accept anyone besides you as her husband. A man within this material world is just a dead body. In fact, superficially, the living entity is covered by this body, which is nothing but a bag of skin decorated with a beard and mustache, hairs on the body, nails on the fingers, and hairs on the head. Within this decorated bag are bunches of muscles, bundles of bones, and pools of blood, always mixed with stool, urine, mucus, bile, and polluted air, and enjoyed by different kinds of insects and germs. This is Srimad Bhagavata. If you think we shouldn't read this in the temple, well, it's a gross description from the Srimad Bhagavatam by Rukmini Devi to Krishna. She continues, "A foolish woman accepts such a dead body as her husband, and in sheer misunderstanding loves him as her dear companion. This is possible only because such a woman has never relished the ever blissful fragrance of your lotus feet." So it might appear that Srila Prabhupada, who made this Krishna book, he is contradicting himself by stating that women should be very chaste to their husband, and in this way they can get elevated in the next life. In this regard, I'd like to read again from Krishna book. This is Krishna speaking to the gopis who had come to dance with him at night. He'd called them with his flute. And the gopis are glorified for being who they are. The gopis who ran to Krishna, leaving their families and homes and husbands. But Krishna, in his usual, what's the word for that? Capricious way, you could say, maybe. You know the word for capricious in Hindi? Do you know what it means in English? It means whimsical. What's the word in Hindi? Any such word? Maybe not. Swachanda rupse. Maybe. Whimsical. And also, typical we find between Krishna and the gopis and between his wives is kind of joking. Joking. In which both parties will state something which they don't really mean. Anyway, what Krishna is going to say here, Srila Prabhupada comments that it is actually very relevant. Krishna speaking to the gopis about the duties of chaste wives, as if to send them back to their husbands, although that he doesn't want them to go back to their husbands. But after I read this section, you'll find that Srila Prabhupada's comments that this is actually relevant to those who are not on the level of the gopis and Rukmini. So let's read it. Krishna speaking through the translated by Srila Prabhupada. "Another thing I must explain to you," that's Krishna speaking to the gopis, "is that for a chaste woman, service to the husband without duplicity is the best religious principle. Not only should a woman be faithful and chaste to her husband, but she should also be affectionate to the friends of her husband, obedient to the father, and mother of her husband, and affectionate to the younger brothers of her husband. And most importantly, a woman must take care of her children." In this way, Krishna explained the duty of a woman. He also stressed the point of serving the husband. Even if he is not of very good character, or even if he is not very rich or fortunate, or even if he is old or invalid on account of continued diseases, whatever her husband's condition, a woman should not divorce her husband if she actually desires to be elevated to the higher planetary systems after leaving this body. Besides that, it is considered abominable in society if a woman is unfaithful and goes searching for another man. Such habits will deter a woman from being elevated to the heavenly planets and the results of such habits are very degrading. A married woman should not search for a paramour, for this is not sanctioned by the Vedic principles of life. If you think that you are very much attached to me and you want my association, I advise you not to personally try to enjoy me. It is better for you to go home, simply talk about me and think of me. And by this process of constantly remembering me and chanting my names, you will surely be elevated to the spiritual platform. There is no need to stand near me. Please go back home. The instruction given herein by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to the gopis was not at all sarcastic. Such instruction should be taken very seriously by all honest women. The chastity of women is specifically stressed herein by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, this principle should be followed by any serious woman who wants to be elevated to a higher status of life. Krishna is the center of all affection for all living creatures. When this affection is developed for Krishna, one surpasses and transcends all Vedic injunctions. This was possible for the gopis because they saw Krishna face to face. This is not possible for any woman in the conditioned state. Unfortunately, sometimes a rascal following the philosophy of monism or oneness very irresponsibly takes advantage of the Rasa Leela to imitate the behavior of Krishna with the gopis, entice many innocent women and mislead them in the name of spiritual realization. As a warning, Lord Krishna has herein hinted that what was possible for the gopis is not possible for ordinary women. Although a woman can actually be elevated by advanced Krishna consciousness, she should not be enticed by an imposter who says that he is Krishna. She should concentrate her devotional activities in chanting about Krishna and meditating upon him as is advised herein. One should not follow the men called sahajiyas, the so-called devotees who take everything very lightly. So how to understand all of this? On the one hand, the injunction is sarvadhaman parityaja mamekam sharanam raja. One should fully surrender to me, giving up all other dharmas. On the other hand, Krishna himself, speaking jokingly to the gopis, because he told them that they should go back home to their husbands, but he didn't want them to go, and they definitely didn't want to go. But that advice is applicable to devotees, to all women, including devotees, Srila Prabhupada says here, who are not on the level of the gopis. And we can include within that Rukmini, who was quoted earlier. There is the famous example in India of Mirabai, who was mad in love for Krishna, and she violated all Vedic principles of chaste women, and she's glorified for doing so. Now this question often comes up because there appears to be in Srila Prabhupada's teachings, as in the teachings of Shastra, some contradiction. And that contradiction comes about because apparent contradictions, not actually a contradiction, but certain instructions are suitable for everyone and certain instructions are not. The instruction to surrender to Krishna is suitable for everyone. That is what everyone should do. But at the same time, how to surrender to Krishna, that is not the same for everyone, because not everyone is on the same platform. And if someone tries to artificially come to or act on the completely perfect platform without actually being on that platform, then they're almost certain to fall down. So for most people, they are advised to follow the Vedic injunctions, which regulate social life, the Varnashram injunctions, and practice Krishna consciousness, sadhana, side by side. Now, sometimes the principles of bhakti, they might appear to be in contradiction to those of Varnashram, just like this one. Should women are supposed to follow their husband. What if the husband doesn't want her to chant Hare Krishna? It becomes a difficult situation. How to handle that and manage that. But nevertheless, within Vaishnava society, as well as in all other branches of Vedic society, speaking from the social point of view here, because Vaishnavism is in and of itself transcendental, but within this world, it operates within the sphere of the broader Vedic culture. So within broader Vedic culture, Vaishnav women, with a few exceptions, they follow the general rules that everyone else follows of being ordinary housewives. Of course, they're extraordinary in as much as they're devotees, but they're married, they have children, and if they're fortunate to be in a Vaishnava family, which generally they would be, because Vaishnavism was generally spread or generally operated within families. So they wouldn't worship demigods. Well, if they were in Madhva Sampradaya, they might worship demigods also. But they would follow the Vaishnava principles. Yeah, mostly it would be in families, because after the original preaching of the great acharyas in each sampradaya, then the sampradayas, they didn't spread so much, but they continued in family lines. So you'll find even now, for instance, in Tamil Nadu, that there are the Vaishnava Brahmins of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, Iyengars, who they marry within their own families, and they're all supposed to be Vaishnavas. And they are still, to some extent, mostly. There may be cases also where the husband is a Shaiva and the wife is a Vaishnava, or vice versa, something like that, but in which there's mutual acceptance of each other's mode of worship. So, how do we apply this practically? Especially as Srila Prabhupada made many concessions in the modern world, and we move into broader areas of how do devotees in ISKCON behave. Now this is a point of much contention within our modern ISKCON world, in which I'm known as being conservative. There are other less complimentary terms which are also sometimes applied to my stance. My understanding is that Srila Prabhupada preached Krishna consciousness very broadly in the modern world. Much of his preaching and most was to Western people, and mostly Westerners became his followers. The percentage of his Indian disciples was, I don't know, difficult to say exactly, maybe less than 5%. And Srila Prabhupada made many concessions. for the devotees in the Western world. He didn't try to make them fully Vedic, which is not a very clear term, what Vedic means, because the Vedic culture itself is very broad, but in a general way we can say Vedic. In other words, Srila Prabhupada did encourage, for instance, his female disciples in the West to wear saris. For instance, when he came back in 1968 after returning to India for some months, he brought saris for his female disciples. So he did encourage what we might call Vedic or Hindu culture in many ways. But he didn't force that. There are many things that he didn't force also. And he writes in one purport that he's engaging both the boys and the girls in the Western world because their social customs are different in preaching, and this policy is being very effective. Now, Srila Prabhupada also, in his books which he wrote before coming to the West, in his magazine articles before he came to the West, when he came to the West, he also spoke and wrote a lot about Varnashram, although he didn't try to... Actually, I've spoken about all this in his Women's Masters and Mothers seminar. It's all... Anyway, there's no harm to say it again. But to get all that, to get all these points in detail, that seminar should be listened to. So Srila Prabhupada, he didn't... In his practical preaching, he didn't try to implement that in the West immediately. But he very much wanted to do so, and he made it clear that to his followers that 50% of... he wanted to implement this, and he said that 50% of his work was still to be done. He spoke of making brahmanas in an emergency situation. He also spoke of the qualification for brahmanas. So it would appear that the standards that Srila Prabhupada gave in the beginning days of the movement were not meant to be the standards forever. That he wanted to create within the Vaishnava world a more traditional kind of society. In which many of the traditional usages were followed. Now, just one example that... first I'll state something else, that Srila Prabhupada told Subhag Maharaj, he took sannyas after Srila Prabhupada left this world, who was born in a Bengali family, who was studying in England and joined the movement there. So he spent quite a few years in England with the devotees. So Srila Prabhupada told him that you can learn philosophy from the Western devotees, but the culture, you keep what you learn from your parents. So Srila Prabhupada didn't enforce many of the details of Hindu culture, for want of a better term, on his Western disciples. At the same time, he didn't try to force his Indian disciples to follow the Western culture, and he didn't tell them that you should take all these concessions that he gave to the Western devotees. Now, one example which wasn't discussed when Srila Prabhupada was present, but which has come up in recent times, was that in the Western world, Srila Prabhupada, he didn't tell his lady disciples not to come to the temple during their once-a-month period. He didn't tell his disciples in India also that they should come, but it was just understood. It's understood from Shastra and tradition that to do so, well, you just don't do so, that's all. It's just unimaginable, because it's like for a man to have diarrhea is constantly, so it's in an unclean state all the time. Now, Srila Prabhupada did make a concession for this in Mayapur for the Western devotees, Western women devotees, but should that be implemented for all devotees, for all time, against all the injunctions of Shastra and tradition? I say no. If it was an offense in the past, it's an offense in the present, and although Srila Prabhupada did allow his Western women disciples to do so, that, again, it's a concession to, I take that as a concession to their mentality, rather than a sacred order. Otherwise, any Vaishnava Acharya in the past and the present also in India would say, no, that's just not allowed. Now, here we have what seems to be, again, a clash of spiritual principles versus some mundane consideration. Spiritual principle is one should come to the temple. Mundane consideration is, well, the body is there and what can you do? But then again, of course, it states in the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, which Srila Prabhupada translates as the nature of devotion, that one should not come to the temple in an unclean state, which means without taking baths after passing stool, for instance, or if one's relatives have died, there are certain rules like that. So that's also, there is a consideration of ritual purity and impurity in Vaishnavism also. It's not that a pujari may be completely in full of love for Krishna, but he doesn't go on the altar without bathing. So there are what you might call material considerations also in the worship of Krishna. There may be some exceptions to that. Vamsidas Babaji, for instance, worshipped his deities without any rules, but that is an exception which is inimitable. The particular questions, so these are some principles. It says here, women are not allowed to go for material education. Yeah, traditionally education of women is in the home. And Srila Prabhupada stated that he wanted that the girl children of his disciples should be educated at home. And specifically he said in cooking and chastity. And they should learn to read so they can read his books. As far as material education, Srila Prabhupada was not enthusiastic about that for anyone, male or female. Some material education is required for everyone. For instance, you could say how to cook chapatis is material education. So some material education is required for everyone, but the center of education should be Krishna consciousness. And there are divisions of duties. Most in Vedic culture, which Srila Prabhupada wanted to implement, most men also don't get a rigid education. They're not educated in a school for years and years together. In formal scholarly education, that's only a small percentage. Kshatriyas get some of that, and most of theirs is martial education. And of course, in matters of administration and this and that. And Vaishyas, they get a little, and Shudras none. But they have some education. Even Shudras, they're educated how to do whatever they have to do, whether it's pulling a plow, making pots, cutting people's hair, weaving, whatever their profession is. So education doesn't mean just learning the three R's. What is that? Reading, writing, arithmetic. We only have one R, religion. So, traditionally women are educated in the home. I've seen women from traditional Brahmin families who never went to Gurukul, but who are very learned in Shastra. And they pick it up in the home. Their husband is supposed to educate them. So it's not that they don't get education, but they don't go out to the going to school. The actual effect of mundane education or girls going to college and school is lack of chastity, lack of character. Boys and girls, their whole character is spoiled from the beginning by this mixing. Neither men nor women know what it, because they're not trained in that. They're just trained to, their whole emphasis is on earning money. Then they don't know how to live as husband and wife. And therefore, there are so many problems in family life. So, are women allowed to go for book distribution? Yeah, well, Srila Prabhupada, yes, he engaged his female disciples in doing that. So, how long do we continue with this? Well, it's still an emergency preaching situation. But on the other hand, there's another kind of preaching required to show people how to live as human beings. That means varnashram culture with Krishna at the center. And actually, if that's followed, then women, they naturally have children. And they have to look after them. So there may not be so much scope for going for book distribution and all these things. So what's the highest dharma? Well, you could say the highest dharma is preaching Krishna consciousness. But one kind of preaching is to show what it means to be Krishna conscious in a more pristine kind of way. Pristine means old, according to the old culture, and pure culture. So there's a few thoughts about that. Again, for more please listen to that, women, masters or mothers. We could say that modern society in India has become like the West. So why don't we just have all the concessions that Prabhupada made for the West? But Srila Prabhupada put a lot of hope on Indians being Krishna conscious and spreading it around the world. So I would hope that Srila Prabhupada, he spoke of American money and Indian knowledge should be put together to spread Krishna consciousness around the world. And he compared them to Lakshmi and Saraswati. Put them together. So, better that India sets the example of proper culture, because the Western people, they have no idea whatsoever. And in India still there's some idea. So, I would say, but I'm only one person, that better in India in particular that we establish all these principles and not make concessions that Srila Prabhupada made for the West, but rather follow the same culture that probably at least all of your grandparents followed, if you're not your parents. Although last night when I was coming in, I saw some old photos had been put outside the temple of someone's great-grandparents or whatever. One photo was dated 1918. I don't know how they ended up outside the temple. And it showed a young woman at that time with her hair parted on the side and with no visible sindhu. So parting on the side, Srila Prabhupada explained, that a chaste woman doesn't do that. She should have sindhur, but already by 1918, the women were, her head wasn't covered also, although presumably she was married, because the photo was with another photo of who was presumably her husband. They must be all long dead. So the culture was already breaking down. In fact, it's been breaking down since the beginning of... Well, it's always breaking down, because that's the nature of the material world. Everything's always deteriorating, but especially in Kali Yuga, things deteriorate. Social values deteriorate. Tatashchanu dinam dharma satyam sukcham shamadaya kalena balina rajan nangshantyayur balang smritihi. Shukadev said to Parikshit Maharaj, in the age of Kali, with the passing of every single day, dharma will decrease. Truthfulness will decrease. Cleanliness will decrease. Tolerance will decrease. Mercy will decrease. Kalena balena rajan nangsha. Lifespan will decrease. Bodily strength will decrease. And mental strength and memory will decrease. So everything's deteriorating. But then the Krishna conscious movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is supposed to introduce a golden age within the age of Kali. So we shouldn't take it as an excuse that, well, it's Kali Yoga, so we don't have to follow any rules. Just chant Hare Krishna and love Krishna. Well, as Srila Prabhupada pointed out in the quotation I gave here, that's what the Sahajiyas say. Prakriti Sahajiyas. They don't follow any rules and they think, well, we just love Krishna, we just chant Hare Krishna. That's all we have to do. But because they're not... Which is actually a fact. If you just chant Hare Krishna and love Krishna, then you don't have to do anything else. But if you imagine yourself to be on that platform, when you're not actually on that platform, then degradation is certain. So it's a very dangerous stance to take. We don't need to follow any rules. Then one mistakes one's mundane emotions for spiritual. Okay, I'll go on to another point.